I'm sorry, we just realized that the microphone was off. On the right, we have a scheme of a catalyst cycle. Here we can see letter P, which is a phosphine. There are phosphorus molecules, and phosphorus is united to a transition metal. And here, what's interesting is that by doing it, designing phosphorus molecules, we can have various motives to phosphorus, and we can that results in the catalyzer having certain form, certain volume, and certain affinity for some other reactive, like hydrogen or hydrocarbon. And so that's what we play at in metallic catalyst and homogeneous, putting things in phosphorus to make it bigger or smaller or more attachable to other things. Homogeneous catalyst is something that seemed very interesting to me, and that's why I wanted to continue researching it throughout my master's and PhD. And it increasingly called my attention to develop catalyzers that are friendlier with the environment, because many of the catalysts that are used in the chemical industry have a well-earned bad fame in society. When we think about the chemical industry, we associate it with dangerous and toxic things, and that is usually the case, even though the products obtained from there are important for the economy of the countries in our contemporary world. But few times do we speak about the pollution problems, the sub-products, and all the toxic gases that these industries release. And without reading this table, I want to tell you about some processes of homogeneous catalyst processes with transition metals that are very important, that have very great economic interest. There's one where we get some medicine for Parkinson's disease, naproxeno, which is an anti-inflammatory, also intermediaries of an herbicide that is used in all of Latin America called prosulfuron, the production of detergents, flavor additives, flavor of mint, high-density polyethylene, which is one of the ones that are easiest to recycle, even though it is plastic. There's a prime matter for paints and or even meat preservers. And as a student, this seemed very interesting, sometimes ugly, that in the introduction or explanation or motivation for our projects, it's almost always the importance of the study of catalysts and the development of increasingly efficient and effective methods to produce these kind of products. And their importance are usually measured in the tons produced per year or the profit generated. And I wondered why we never say that it is important, for example, naproxeno, saying how many people have improved their quality of life, or detergents, how many liters of water have been polluted with detergents. Or how many sea animals die because of ingesting pieces of plastic such as high-density polyethylene, like the recipes that we find in the world, in academia, at least in publications, in journals such as Nature and all these peer-reviewed journals. the motivation, the importance is always focused on these scriptures. In addition, phosphorus throughout history, if we see who discovered it and how much it has called the world's attention, phosphorus turns out to be very interesting. It was discovered hydrating human urine, because we have a great deal of phosphorus in our body, proteins, phosphorus, or cells dust, iron dust, and it's a vital element. And it has a property that in its pure state, it lights up, it shines in the dark. And so in the time of alchemy, this was really interesting. They thought that it was a philosopher's stone. And since the time of alchemy, people went a bit crazy over phosphorus. And when they found it, from the beginning, those who developed a method to obtain it would keep that method in secret, because they immediately thought of the option of selling it, the option of monopolizing the production of phosphorus, the knowledge of how to obtain it, and they even used it as a show, as entertainment for courts, and it could make people shine in the dark. Here we're seeing an image. It's a bit exaggerated, the light that's emitting by phosphorus there, but it does shine in the dark. And this is a painting that represents the alchemist that discovered phosphorus. He says it's about 5 liters of high temperature urine, and they did all sorts of things to obtain it. Phosphorus now is present everywhere. It's in matches, medicines, fertilizers and pesticides, poison for rats, chemical weapons, additives in producing food, detergents, plastification, flame retardants, and many more. I'm surprised that many of these things economically have resulted very important. But I, who have always worked in groups that are dedicated to research with phosphorus, it was very difficult to speak to them on the other uses of phosphorus, or why these things are used today, or what consequences are there for its use as detergent. Yes, we're producing a great deal. So what happens with that excess? Where does it end up? And in great part because I couldn't answer those questions, and because in addition, apparently the system where they keep us as students, the time goes so fast that you have very little time to think. You have to finish your PhD in 3 to 5 years, and with results having published. You have to do reports and present those results in congresses with relative frequency, and you have to make these presentations. And so in the end, you meet the same students from many universities and institutions every 3 or 4 months in congresses specialized in phosphorus, where we hear the same, because in 4 months, of course, there isn't much time to have no results. And at the end of the day, you have us an introduction of our projects, the same discourse that is repeated from previous works, things we read in these publications, and there really isn't time, or at least we don't take the time and seek the spaces to try to change the discourse, to raise a different awareness and go around. The explanation of what motivates us truly to do this kind of research. And why not research phosphorus, study phosphorus, But maybe think that if the detergents have to be done with phosphorus, that making sure that they don't have the impact on the environment that they have now. When I realized that phosphorus was much beyond that, and that the importance is, goes beyond catalysm, and that we have it very close to us in everyday life, then I turned to look at pesticides. And I think that phosphorus and nitrogen are two elements that are very present in the awareness of people who do agrochemistry, because they're some of the main elements that create fertilizers and pesticides. And as we know, and it's very well documented, the imbalance that they have caused in the environment. This is an image of the cycle of phosphorus. The natural cycle of phosphorus, it works as follows. We can begin with mines, which phosphorus is found there as phosphate, that means mineral salts. These are extracted. They're used in various applications, as we've seen before. All of them end up in the water, and in that water, phosphates deposits are created once again, and they feed the bottom of the oceans, and the new mines are created. Of course, this process takes a very, very long time, and the problem with the unbalance is that extraction and the utilization is much faster than the necessary time for the earth to create these new phosphorus elements. And so never before had there been such concentration of phosphorus in the water as there is now. And it mainly comes from the use of fertilizers and pesticides. I've been reading that 80% of the phosphorus that we use in pesticides and other fertilizers go to the water, because plants don't have the ability to absorb that kind of fertilizer, the amount of fertilizer that's and the instructions that you have to use. And to me, this is a mainly economic interest. The manufacturers of fertilizers that say you have to put so many liters of fertilizer in your land to obtain good results. Well, it turns out that no, 80% goes directly to the water. So we're depleting phosphorus and we're wasting phosphorus in a brutal manner. And I know also that there are research studies that use fungi, and we've been hearing a lot about that. And they create a very complex networks in the earth, mixing with the roots of the plants, and make phosphorus absorption to be much more effective. This means that the amount of fertilizers that you can use on the earth is much less. And very few people know about this, that other methods can be used to make it more efficient. In addition, if you see it as in terms of financial numbers, and we talk about phosphorus, we always, almost always go to this topic of fertilizers. But I am interested in researching and critically analyzing the use of phosphorus in pesticides. Pesticides is another topic that is very important, not only for the environment, but for health as well. And apparently phosphorus plays a very important role, not only in health, well, certainly in health, but we have to look very closely at the structure of the molecules of the pesticides. Where is phosphorus together with what groups, and how this affects living beings? And one of the reasons I was upset with the academy and my experience in studying is that I realized that, at least for me, it was much more significant to do a critical analysis of these topics before going on with research in the lab. And that's why I decided, at least for now, to leave the academy and I research on my own in the literature in these topics. And I want to write critically about this and to publicize this And this space is very important to me because I find here people who are interested in this critical reflection, which was very difficult for me to find during my PhD in Berlin, at a place in a country where chemistry is one of the careers, one of the best careers that you can choose to study, because it offers work opportunities. The industry in Germany is very important, and I think that this discourse that bachelor students here in Germany seems to become the engine behind the motivation for studying chemistry, instead of asking these questions on how are we going to help each other's community by developing the science, how are we going to stop or create a crack on the wall. And talking about time that space that we need in academia, students, in order to ask these questions, and so we end up somehow reproducing the discourse that the wall itself gives us to reproduce. I also want to give you some very concrete examples that helped me make the decision to shift my topic and do it on my own. There's an experience I want to tell you that it was precisely around the time when the Ayotzinapa case took place that a number of Mexicans got together in Berlin, and we got together and decided that we wanted to express our indignation somehow from Berlin as well, and we decided to go to the Mexican embassy and do a small demonstration. And many of my colleagues and doctorate students in many areas had received an email from CONACYT clearly stating that it was somehow forbidden to participate in demonstrations, and that otherwise they would lose their scholarship. So all of these elements as students, you think it was this freedom is this autonomy is very difficult of saying these research offices, well, I'm gonna spend that money, and how can I lead science so that it is more aware and more communal, and a way of doing science on the left. And we have very little time, and limited in many ways, our research groups. In our research groups, the topic of research is already limited. And as experimental researchers, one of the limitations are resources, because in order to do experiments, and experiments that have a certain credibility, that use techniques that are very expensive. You can't just get together with your neighbors, for example, and say, well, let's do some magnetic resonance to demonstrate this or that. And so, really, don't find a community of scientists with the structure available, the infrastructure available. And so seeing these topics and seeing them critically is very difficult to do conscious science at this level. So I decided that my options in Berlin were to find work in industry, and I was certain that I didn't want to participate working for Bayer or Monsanto or these companies. I certainly wasn't going to give them my time or my work to continue, for them to continue doing what they do and feeding their interests. And the other thing is that in academia, at least in this topic of phosphorus, the link with industry is very clear, and it's very much dictated. You know, the funding comes directly from the industry, and so it is they who tell you which catalysts need to be developed. And because of that, we will try to construct other ways of doing science, doing it in a more conscious way. A very important part for me is to look at the formation, the education of students, and be very aware that when we're educating people, we need these spaces of reflection and this freedom to try new things and ask ourselves what for, who's going to use what we do, and when it's used, well, that it's used for good, and to have the freedom to make sure that in the discourse, not only those things that are interesting to capital are said. And what I mean to say by this is that this part of the education of students of doing science is very important to do, create cracks in the wall and keep it from growing taller and taller, and we don't end up trapped in simply the reproduction of the discourse of science co-opted by industry and capital.